The push for public school reform has been an explosive topic for years, but last fall's release of the film Waiting for Superman pushed the issue to the forefront of debate across the nation. Now, Hoosiers, for better or worse, don't have to track down a DVD of the documentary to see what all the fuss is about. They can watch the debate unfold in real time and in real life right here in Indianapolis as members of the General Assembly consider the most sweeping education reform package the state has seen in decades. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, a panel of education experts, including the state superintendent of public instruction, goes looking for Superman. With school funding effectively capped at current levels, is this the right time to expand the state's charter school program and offer tuition vouchers to students attending private schools? Are teachers being unfairly targeted by efforts to boost accountability and scale back collective bargaining? And will proposed changes in the school funding formula devastate, as some critics claim, districts with stagnant or declining enrollments? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. We collaborate with companies like Scale Computing, one of the country's most promising new companies. Scale Computing, the next generation of data storage. The idea economy is here.
It's a bird. It's a plane. Nope, that object that's overshadowing most of this year's legislative deliberations is education reform. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the controversial film Waiting for Superman, or at least the debate it highlights, is playing out right in front of us this session. Advocates say the push for reform is an attempt to put students and their best interest before the self-serving demands of special interests. Critics say it's a fundamental threat to public education, organized labor, and the constitutionally guaranteed wall between church and state. Will the reform package offered by Governor Mitch Daniels turn out to be Superman or Lex Luthor? Joining me to answer that question and more, our State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Bennett, Democratic Representative Terry Gooden of Austin, a member of the Budget Writing House Ways and Means Committee and Superintendent of Crothersville Community Schools, Republican Representative Robert Boehning of Indianapolis, Chairman of the House Education Committee, and Rick Muir, President of the Indiana Federation of Teachers and affiliate of the AFL-CIO. And I thank you all for being here for this important discussion.
Good morning, Lex.
Hey, I'm not wearing that triangle or whatever. Well, let's start with that, and the whole Superman is a jumping off point. Tony Bennett, if you pulled off that tie and pulled open the shirt, would we see the top of the S emblem there?
You would see a 12-pack.
That would be Superman in my book, I guess. But I mean, do you see yourself figuratively as Superman? Answering the call for Hoosier students?
No, you know, first of all, it's not about Tony Bennett. It's not about Rick Muir. It's not about Terry Gooden. It's not about Bob Boehning. It really is, in my opinion, and John, not to take exception how you open, but this isn't, to me, a discussion about education reform versus special interest. This is about education reform versus structures we've put in place as policymakers. It's about structural reform, because I believe, as we have this debate today in 2011 about policy reform in education, I think the great challenge that Representative Gooden's going to have in the next 10 years as a representative, and he's looking at me like, I'm going to be here 10 more years, will be the next phase will be fiscal reform. How do we fund excellence? How do we marry fiscal policy and ed policy? So for me, this is not about saying that there are adults who don't put children first. Frankly, I talk to far too many educators. I have been in education far too long to believe that the vast majority of teachers, principals, superintendents, and school boards don't care about kids. That's a fallacy. This is about structural reform.
Terry, good, jump in there. I mean, do you see this as a battle of good versus evil? And if so, who's good? Who's wearing the white hat? Who's wearing the black hat?
Well, I don't know if it's a battle of good versus evil, but I first want to say I know who all the supermen and superwomen are out there. Those teachers that are on the front lines, those people are the real supermen and superwomen that we're talking about. And we're moving into a time now where fiscal policy is very important. We know we're in a downturn economically, so we have to spend our dollars as the wisest way we want to spend that. And what we're trying to figure out is where we want to spend that in an educational system that's founded and moving forward, or whether we want to go somewhere else and spend that money. So that's probably more of the debate, is where the money's spent necessarily than good versus evil. So,
of course, a lot of that debate about where money is spent is a debate that happens at least every 2 years. This year there are some more profound philosophical differences, you might say, as well.
Very philosophical differences, John. There really are, and that's one of the reasons the Democrats walked out, and we had our filibuster was because of philosophical differences we had with the leadership there in the House of Representatives. And, you know, no one in the Democrat caucus is against education reform. We know that the collective bargaining laws need to be tweaked in some way. They're over 40 years old. So we also know that there's other ways that children can learn. They just don't have to be sitting in a public school in a nice straight row in a classroom. As an educator, we all know that all children learn in a different manner. And we have to have some opportunities for some of those kids to be able to learn in other ways that are not getting it in a public school. But saying that, we can't go carte blanche and just open the doors for everybody, because I think that would just probably render havoc on the whole educational system and even the budget of the state of Indiana.
Robert Manning, you've been shepherding much of this legislation through the House as chairman of the Education Committee. Why this session? I mean, you look generally at state statistics. Attendance rates are up. Graduation rates are up. Test scores seem to be inching up. And of course, as has been mentioned, we're dealing with a significant budget challenge. Why so much reform all in one session?
Well, obviously, I think that primary reason, we've got governor, superintendent, and both House and Senate that are really focused on education, as well as our president. When you look at a national level, we've got a president focusing on charter schools, focusing on teacher evaluation. Education is a priority in this country and this state, and I think time is right when we've got all parties together singing pretty much out of the same songbook and thinking these are some of the same directions we ought to be moving. Focusing really at children first, and then at institutions and reforming them as we move forward.
This notion on focusing on children first, Rick Muir, I'm guessing you have some thoughts on whether that's really what's at work here.
Well, let me start off by saying that I truly believe teachers have always had children as their focus first. Throughout my career, I think it's always been the case. I think it's certainly the case today that it's almost like there's an insinuation out there that teachers, educators, do not put students first. And I don't think anything could be further from the truth. What worries me is not education reform. You know, teachers have been a part of reform and are very much involved in reform as we sit here and speak. What worries me in this educational reform agenda is a lot of things, but let me mention just two. One is that we're attempting in this session to carve out that professional voice from the decisions that are going to be made. I'm a firm believer that educators in our public schools knows what's needed, what's missing, what'll work, what doesn't work, and yet there's legislation in this session to carve that input out. That bothers me. The second thing that bothers me about some of the legislation in this session and the economic times with the budget woes have just been mentioned, we are attempting to do some take some big steps at a time when we don't have money to support it. What I mean by that is we have cash-strapped school districts all over the state of Indiana. The vast majority have a budget that's been lessened by quite a bit. We have class sizes going up. We have the arts being cut out of our school districts across Indiana. We have curriculum being cut. I could go on and on. What worries me is that we don't have the money to properly fund the districts we have, and now we're going to carve out as much as $60 million over the next 2 years from public education and give it to parochial and private schools. And so that's the problem I have with some of the discussions that I'm hearing and seeing about reform, those two items.
Okay, well, you touched on two of probably four or five major initiatives that make up the reform package, and you mentioned teachers. Let's dive right into it with that. The governor in his State of the State address offered his contention that teachers are by far the most important factor in a child's education. He says 20 times more important than anything else, more important than class size, which has always been sort of a buzz phrase as well in the education reform arena. Do you agree, first of all, Tony Bennett, that teachers make or break?
Well, there's no question. I mean, there is absolutely no question, John. The secret secret recipe to great schools is a great principal surrounded by great teachers that teach to very high expectations for every child in their classroom. I mean, if we look at great schools across the state and across the nation, we can find those three elements intertwined in every one of those schools.
Rick Muir brought up the point, though, that if teachers are that valuable and have that much to offer, why cut them out of the process? And I should elaborate for those who don't follow the process
every twist and turn, referring, of course, to changes, proposed changes in collective bargaining. Now teachers can basically bargain on any number of issues with their school officials, their school districts, their school boards. Under this legislation that it appears likely to be enacted, it would be limited, those negotiations, their input to salary, wages, benefit, those sorts of things.
And we also left the discussion issues in the collective bargaining law. We left discussion in so that teachers could have a voice. But let me tell you, I'm a former superintendent. Representative Gooden's a superintendent. There are 292 superintendents in the state, John. I don't know one of them that will shut their teachers out of the process, given the high level of accountability, given the high level of competition. There isn't a superintendent or a principal that I know that's going to just shut teachers out of the process in terms of making their schools great. We just don't need it in Indiana's collective bargaining law. We don't need it in collective bargaining agreements. And we will have discussion under the law as it's proposed today.
Terry Gooden, I mean, you wear a couple hats. You're a superintendent hat.
I know a couple that probably would.
Well, I mean, respond to this. The teachers, are they worried unnecessarily?
Well, I don't know if there's a such thing as worrying unnecessarily. I heard a joke one time that some fellow said, worrying actually helps because every time I worry about something, it never happens. So, maybe worrying is a good effect. But we got to remember, when we talk about the equation of great schools, great teachers, great administrators, I think probably the governor is correct in the aspect that the teachers are probably the most important aspect in the classroom, but probably the most important aspect affecting that child is the parents.
That's right.
And we have got to have a good connection with parents when we talk about education, because really that motivation for a child in education ultimately must come from the parents or the family that's raising that child. So we've got to have a good combination of parents, teachers, administrators, community to move an education and move a child forward. And really that really tends to show about the whole, it tends to show the whole educational debate of, I'm starting to believe as an educator that I don't know if the real problem per se, if there's a problem in education, is truly an education problem. I think it's starting to become a social problem. I think if you really look closely, John, the education problem ultimately may be a social problem that we're dealing with in the state.
If I might, let me tell you my opinion of discussable items. That's how I was raised. My parents said, I'm going to discuss it with you, and then when I shut the door, it's going to be this way. That doesn't work in the professional world. No one would start having a meeting to discuss surgical procedures in one of our hospitals and exclude surgeons from those discussions. From that, this is more important than discussions. Discussion says we'll listen to you and then we'll go forward and do what we feel is best. I have a lot of respect. All superintendents, principals, teachers, we're all in this for the same reason. We're all very dedicated. But why carve that out? I'm of the philosophy that the more heads you put around any item that you want to resolve and reform, the better. Put the educators in there. But Terry said something, and I'll be quick. You take a look at any successful school district, and this may make it very simple, but I've always said you pick the most successful school district in Indiana, and you pick the least successful school district in your opinion, however you want to form that, by scores or whatever. Take the staff from the superintendent to the custodian and trade for 3 years and see what each school district's getting. My point is this. You can't just put so much importance on teachers and principals and superintendents. They play a big role. You must look at the other factors. And I have been where Terry just said for a lot of years. Teachers are taking a browbeating for society's shortcomings that's out of their control. And if we're really going to get every school district where all of us would like them to be, then we have to tackle those issues also.
Well, I want to get to some other issues, certainly vouchers and school choice, but Robert Banning, I think you probably want to respond to this.
And in fact, that very example of discussables, I sit on a board of directors of a hospital, and it is correct, we don't make decisions without listening to our physicians as we go forward, but they don't have a collective bargaining agreement, but we take very seriously exactly what they say, and I believe in an education environment, as important as education is today, as high stakes as everything is, for administrators to totally ignore it, the most important person on the front line just isn't going to happen, because those are the people who know and have everyday experience with them, and that's exactly how most professions work throughout this country. without collective bargaining agreements.
John, very quickly, I have to jump in here in response to something Rick and Representative Gooden talked about. I would invite every one of our viewers to go to the Department of Education website and watch the streaming video of the State Board of Education meeting this week and listen to what two teachers at Arlington Woods IPS school, elementary school, did. They have become, in my opinion, beacons for what happens to address social issues. They don't give parents a choice but to be involved. As a matter of fact, one of the teachers said, a 25-year teacher said, we leave the excuse bucket of what happens with kids at home. We leave that at the door. Our kids are going to learn. Our kids are going to learn at a high level, and we don't care how disadvantaged. And by the way, this is a school with a almost 100% free and reduced lunch population.
Well, we're going to get even quicker answers now because we're down to the closing minutes of the discussion. I appreciate your input on teachers. School choice. Republicans say got to have more school choice. Parents need to be able to send their children to other public schools, which they can do now under state statute, or to private schools with vouchers that would be partly funded by the state. Good idea, bad idea?
You know what? I'm a proponent of school choice, but probably in a little bit different manner. I don't want to outsource our tax dollars. And as a matter of fact, I consider people who start charter schools, or those are corporations and companies. I've had a lot of people in our caucus talk about that, and it's really bilking the taxpayer. They're making 3% of the money that goes to this school actually can go to profit to that charter school or that company. I don't think that's a wise investment.
You've even proposed an amendment, would in fact bar for-profit companies from deriving any financial.
And actually, there's the companies that are in charter school areas. Now, not all companies, but most of them are not-for-profits. I think that's probably one of the guidelines they have to follow. But really, even those folks can make a profit off of the taxpayers' back. And more importantly, it's not off the taxpayers' back. It's off those children, because that 3% of the money that goes to that school could have been spent on those kids in that school.
Let me tell you my what I think we've come to.
But do it fast, because remember,
what we've come to in Indiana is really not school choice for parents and students. We've come to choice for schools. We are letting our public schools select their students that they're going to accept by test scores, by behavioral portfolios. We are privatizing our public schools in Indiana. The real school choice is by the schools. I never thought I'd see our public schools selecting their student body as private and parochial schools have done my whole lifetime. There is a place for private and parochial schools. My wife graduated from a parochial school. But when we start turning public schools into private schools, privatizing them, giving school choices, not parents and students, someone needs to draw the line.
Bob Banning, let me ask you something. We have a Facebook page. We've entered this 21st century, just like the schools, and viewers and listeners are invited to offer questions. Several of the questions this week, and education reform, as you would imagine, generates a buzz, dealt with the constitutionality of the voucher program, because the state constitution, which is even more explicit probably than the U.S. Constitution on the separation of church and state, says the public treasury, no funds can be drawn for any institution that's religious or theological in nature. How do you square that?
Well, first off, you know, we modeled our voucher bill after the higher ed program we have. We currently have, under our student assistance program, we have freedom of choice, where we actually segregate our money that we make available for students for higher ed so that they can go to a private school, a parochial, sectarian, non-public institution of higher education. So we're really modeling it after something we've already done. So in terms of breaking that mold, it's already been done. And the other thing, if you look at the Constitution, it says that we are to provide by any acceptable means an education and move forward on it. We have to provide common schools, which we are doing with our public schools and in our charter schools, but it says by any other means we are supposed to move education forward in the state, and I believe this fits that parameter.
Yeah, the voucher program, somebody mentioned earlier this was partially responsible for the walkout and your visit to Urbana, Illinois, Representative. The question is,
I know where your train of thought's going. I think it's all about accountability. And what we've got to have is more accountability in our public school corporations. And I think when we do that and we have accountability, I think that can probably be driven from the top down as we move forward with the maybe some groups put together by the superintendent advisory groups. If a school's failing, let's have the public school superintendent's advisory group come into the school, take a real hard look at where these failures are coming from, and maybe we even get to the point where we've got to dissect the entire school and start all over in that school corporation. But I still think it should remain a public school system.
Dr. Bennett, one thing that Democrats wanted that they didn't get was this notion that vouchers would be limited to schools that have been underperforming in the public sector. I should say that those would be the students or parents who would be eligible for vouchers. Republicans said no, it should be open to everybody. Doesn't that conflict with this notion that school choice is all about helping parents and kids in failing schools?
Well, I think it goes back to your opening, John. This is not about good versus evil. This is not about failing schools. This is not about bad schools. This is about giving children, and I'll use where I'm from in southern Indiana. We have schools that are performing quite well. In the school corporation where I served, there were children in my 11,000 student school corporation that we could not serve. Didn't mean we had bad kids. Doesn't mean we had bad schools. It means that those children needed another option. So it shouldn't be limited to just failing schools. It should really be focused on the needs of the child and making sure that our children have the equipment they need to lead us in a 21st century.
Finally, the money issue. Clearly, funding will probably remain what it has been in 2011 at $6.2 billion a year, but the formula would be different. Some people say that's going to really hurt rural schools, urban schools that don't have growing enrollments.
And it really, that also brings in the question about vouchers and sending money to different schools. Because we have one pie, and I always make the joke about it. I love to stay with my grandmother, and I was the only grandkid there because she'd make a pie, and I got that whole pie. But when the other grandkids started showing up, I got less of that pie, you know. So, and the same thing's going to happen with public schools. There's a certain amount of money, and once more children come into the account, the ADM count, then that's going to draw more money out of that pie or out of that pot of $6.2 billion. So it's going to have a definite effect on that. Also, we talk about rural schools. There's this theme about money following the child, and it sounds great, but all educational research shows that there are kids who have, for whatever reason, whatever background they come from, they're just a little more difficult to educate, and it takes just a little more money to do that. So we've got to make sure we keep that complexity index moving forward. And also small schools, you've got a certain structure you've got to maintain a school corporation, and those schools have to be funded to maintain that structure.
All right. We could go on for hours, believe me, obviously, the crew is telling me they have the kryptonite out, and they're threatening Superman and all of us if we don't cut it off here. I thank you all for being here for this discussion. Again, my guests have been State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Bennett, Democratic Representative Terry Gooden of Austin, Republican Representative Robert Boehning of Indianapolis, and Rick Muir, President of the Indiana Federation of Teachers. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we graduate to higher education. How will the state's colleges and universities fare in the new state budget? To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week, I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time to shift from schools to schools of thought. Time for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, we spent a lot of time at the roundtable talking about policy. Weigh in on the politics of this. This is a combustible issue.
Absolutely, John. And I think that there are a few things that we didn't anticipate at the beginning of the session. I think the only thing that's really surprised me is that we haven't had the reentry of single-class basketball in any of these discussions.
Now that you've mentioned it, I'm sure there's time for that in the
conference
committee.
Absolutely. But I think there are a lot of things that are on the table now that people did not anticipate at the beginning of the session. Speaker Bosma said back in December that we're not on a jihad against public education. I think some of the Democrats may disagree based on what they've seen since, but I don't think they really expected either the nature or the extent of some of the debate on the voucher bills, the charter bills in particular, and where they're going. And as a result, it's really kind of changed this whole process, and Democrats felt left out. And that was part of the reason for that walkout.
You know, and it's been heated on the floor. It's been heated off the floor. We've seen rallies by both sides of this issue. We've seen Tony Bennett's office said that a fraudulent memo was sent to teachers over his signature. Robert Boehning, another guest on our roundtable, he has a florist shop, and apparently there was a threat to close him down basically during the all-important Valentine's Day holiday.
There are always outliers, John. We saw that with some of the labor discussions and disputes. We saw a false email circulated over the name of a Republican state senator on redistricting. So I don't think you can look at just this issue and say that's the cause for this or this is the result of that.
Now, this past week, the governor's office announced that Mitch Daniels would be going to Washington, D.C. for what I'm sure will be a closely watched speech on education and education reform, American Enterprise Institute, May 4th. Will he be able to tout a clean sweep of accomplishments, or what is he going to say there?
I think this will be a valedictory address. He will have achieved much of what he wanted, what Superintendent Bennett wanted. I think he'll be touting the success to a national audience at that speech.
You say much of what he touted. Is there anything that's at risk at this point? I mean, with Republican control of both chambers, it seems that things are pretty much on rails for his program.
Well, I think there's still some questions about funding of some of these things. The voucher scholarship proposal didn't get funded at the extent that it came in at initially, but largely he will have what he had requested.
All right, Ed. As always, we appreciate your insights. Thank you. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. Take care.
When bright ideas need world-class infrastructure,
you can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.